Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected to the presidency during the worst economic depression in the history of the United States.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
In his first inaugural address, he expressed a confidence in the future of the nation.
This is a day of national consecration. And I am certain that on this day, my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with a candor and a decision which the present situation of our people impels. This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
In his first fireside chat, on April 28, 1935, the president outlined the various work programs that had been affected to take men and women off the relief rolls.
I am jealous of the right of every citizen to call to the attention of his or her government examples of how the public money can be more effectively spent for the benefit of the American people. Never since my inauguration in March 1933 have I felt so unmistakably the atmosphere of American recovery. But it is more than the recovery of the material basis of our individual lives. It is the recovery of confidence in our democratic processes, our republican institutions. We have survived all of the arduous burdens and the threatening dangers of a great economic calamity. We have, in the darkest moments of our national trials, retained our faith in our own ability to master our own destiny. Fear is vanishing. Confidence is growing on every side. Renewed faith in the vast possibilities of human beings to improve their material and spiritual status through the instrumentality of the democratic form of government. That faith is receiving its just reward. For that, we can be thankful to the God who watches over America.
The nation was slowly emerging from the depths of the Depression, and Roosevelt's nomination for a second term was unanimous. In his second acceptance speech on June 27, 1936, he said,
"Better the occasional fault of a government that lives in a spirit of charity than the consistent omission of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference. Is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. Of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny."
On March 4th, 1937, Roosevelt took oath of office for his second term as president. In spite of the gains made in the previous 4 years, he was not content with prevailing conditions.
So let us ask again, have we reached the goal of our vision of that fourth day of March 1933? Have we found our Happy Valley? I see a great nation upon a great continent, blessed with a great wealth of national resources. Its 130 million people are at peace among themselves. They are making their country a good neighbor among the nations. I see a United States which can demonstrate that under democratic methods of government, national wealth can be translated into a spreading volume of human comfort hitherto unknown, and the lowest standard of living can be raised far above the level of mere subsistence. But here is the challenge to our democracy. In this nation, I see tens of millions of its citizens, a substantial part of its whole population, who at this very moment are denied the greater part of what the very lowest standards of today call the necessities of life. I see one-third of a nation ill-housed, ill-clad, ill-nourished. The test of our progress is not whether we add more to the abundance of those who have much. It is whether we provide enough for those who have too little.
At Chicago, October 5th, 1937, the president made his famous quarantine speech. Hitler had marched on the Rhine, and the war clouds gathered over Europe, Asia, and Africa. The president expressed his concern as the infamous partnerships of tyranny were being formed all over the world.
It ought to be inconceivable that in this modern era, and in the face of experience, any nation could be so foolish and ruthless as to run the risk of plunging the whole world into war by invading and violating, in contravention of solemn treaties, the territory of other nations that have done them no real harm and which are too weak to protect themselves adequately. Yet the peace of the world and the welfare and security of every nation, including our own, is today being threatened by that very thing. No nation which refuses to exercise forbearance and to respect the freedom and the rights of others can long remain strong and retain the confidence and respect of other nations. No nation ever loses its dignity or its good standing by conciliating its differences and by exercising great patience with and consideration for the rights of other nations. War is a contagion, whether it be declared or undeclared. It can engulf states and peoples remote from the original scene of hostilities. Yes, we are determined to keep out of war, yet we cannot insure ourselves against the disastrous effects of war and the dangers of involvement. We are adopting such measures as will minimize our risk of involvement, but we cannot have complete protection in a world of disorder in which confidence and security have broken down. If civilization is to survive, the principles of the Prince of Peace must be restored. Shattered trust between nations must be revived. Most important of all, the will for peace on the part of peace-loving nations must express itself to the end that...
to violate their of others will desist from such a cause. There must be positive endeavors to preserve peace. America hates war. America. America hopes for peace. Therefore, America actively engages in the search for peace.
...1941 found Europe completely enslaved, and England stood alone in her finest hour under the rain of Luftwaffe bombs. As the arsenal of democracy, America's factories were humming with lend-lease orders. In his State of the Union message of January 6, 1941, Roosevelt gave the Congress and the American public his Four Freedoms speech.
In the future days that we seek to make secure, we look forward to a world founded upon four essential human freedoms. First is freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. The second is freedom of every person to worship God in his own way everywhere in the world. The third is freedom from want, which translated into world terms means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy, peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. The fourth is freedom from fear, which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armament to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world.
December 7th, 1941, Americans were shocked and infuriated by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. The following day, the president addressed the nation.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack.
The president further tells his audience of several other areas now under attack by the Japanese in the Pacific. He concludes his request for a formal declaration of war as he tells the nation of the sacrifice that lies ahead.
Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
The President's Christmas Eve speech, 1941, with the nation at war with the Axis powers.
Fellow workers for freedom, there are many men and women in America, sincere and faithful men and women, who are asking themselves this Christmas, how can we light our tree? How can we give our gift? How can we meet and worship with love and with uplifted spirit and heart in a world at war, a world of fighting and suffering and death?
On D-Day, June 6, 1944, the President told the world that the long-awaited invasion of Hitler's fortress, Europe, was being staged at Normandy. He asked his fellow Americans to join him in prayers for the Allied fighting men storming the shores of France.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed. But we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day without rest until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war.
With victory in sight in all theaters, the President met with Allied leaders at Yalta to formulate plans for the United Nations. In his last speech to the Congress on March 1, 1945, he reported the results of the conference and the aspirations of its participants.
For the second time in the lives of most of us, this generation is face to face with the objective of preventing wars. To meet that objective, the nations of the world will either have a plan or they will not. The groundwork of a plan has now been furnished and has been submitted to humanity for discussion and decision. No plan's perfect. Whatever is adopted in San Francisco will doubtless have to be amended time and again over the years, just as our own Constitution has been. No one can say exactly how long any plan will last. Peace can endure only so long as humanity really insists upon it and is willing to work for it and sacrifice for it. 25 years ago, American fighting men looked to the statesmen of the world to furnish the work of peace for which they fought and suffered. We failed them. We failed them then. We cannot fail them again. And expect the world to survive again.
April 12th, 1945. The most controversial of all Americans died at Warm Springs, Georgia. Friend and political adversary alike acknowledge him as one of the most courageous and dynamic men in the annals of history.